Blog Talk Radio.
The miracle of a cooperative business model. That's what we will be talking about in tonight's discussion. Please stay with us. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group excuse me, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. And remember, you can be a topic for a future program. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Ankti, who, like me, is a member of UNI. Peace, Brother Ankti. How are you doing this evening?
Greetings, Sister Q. I am doing very well. Glad to hear you. Glad to be on with you tonight and looking forward to our conversation with the family.
Thank you for being with us, and we're looking forward to your discussion. So, Brother Ankti, what brought you to tonight's topic, the miracle of an economic, of a cooperative business model?
Thank you, Sister Q. I've been thinking about our plight as a people for some time, and it strikes me that in spite of the large numbers of black elected officials that we have, including mm-hmm. an African-American president not too long ago, we've got black billionaires and millionaires, we as a people remain powerless, or more accurately, we remain ignorant of the tremendous power we do possess and are completely disorganized and unable to use it. It's this huge paradox. We're sitting on this potential of wealth creation, and yet our communities languish in near poverty, if not poverty. I was struck looking at the news about the plight of our people in Jackson, Mississippi, where mm-hmm. 150,000 residents of the city of Jackson do not have clean drinking water, water mm-hmm. to cook with, water to bathe with, and certainly water to drink.
Right.
But completely, the water is completely because of the bacteria and the mold and all of the other stuff due to the failed filtration system going mm-hmm. back decades, they don't have access to clean water.
Right.
150,000 mm-hmm. people in 2022, United States of America.
mm-hmm.
And with all the finger pointing, trying to blame it on the black mayor, but any conversation around Jackson quickly points out that that municipality is in the stranglehold of a Republican-held state government apparatus. And so, you know, we have to take a very sober view of our condition and have a mm-hmm. very sober conversation about what is causing this. And how do we break free? And so in tonight's conversation, I want us to take off perhaps the rose-colored glasses that we wear sometimes to tell ourselves that things aren't as bad as they are,
uh-huh.
and just look very carefully at what's in front of us. All social power mm-hmm. begins with economic power. That is the ability to feed, clothe, and shelter oneself and to protect ourselves. So
uh-huh.
it means then that we have access to land that we can control and defend. We
uh-huh.
have the necessary tools and equipment to build with. And perhaps even more importantly, we have the organization of ourselves to make maximum use of those resources. What I'm pointing to, Sister Q, is the idea that Ezra Aharon has brought to us in his writings. I'm thinking specifically of Sovereign Psyche, where he
uh-huh.
talks about the ability to exercise sovereignty first has to crystallize and materialize in our minds, in the minds of the people who are seeking to be sovereign. It first has to be something that they have appropriated mentally, internally, and have embraced it to the degree that that is their sole organizing principle. In other words, that becomes their reason for living, their raison d'etre, so to speak. They eat, sleep, and breathe the idea of becoming sovereign again. And I phrase it that way because prior to the European incursion and invasion and conquest of the continent of Africa, we as African people enjoyed sovereignty. We controlled our borders, our land. We made decisions about how we would use the land, what we would produce on the land, how we would feed, clothe, and shelter ourselves, how we would educate our children, how we would take care of our physical bodies and our health care, how we would look after the elderly among us. All of this we did as a sovereign people. And so the point that I want to underscore is that all of that living together and defining what is important and how our institutions will function, all of that sovereignty starts with economic power, the ability to feed, clothe, and shelter ourselves, and the systems that we develop to take care of what we call the material needs of ourselves individually and collectively. That's what an economic system does. It is a system for the distribution, the manufacture, the production of everything necessary to be able to provide shelter, to provide food, to provide clean drinking water, to provide energy, to provide all of the services that a society needs. That is the work that the economic system does for that society. Until we control the economics of our community, we remain at the mercy of those forces outside of our community that do control those forces. So, for example, the reason our people in Jackson, Mississippi don't have clean drinking water is because they do not control the means of that water, you know, how they filter the water, how they store the water, and how it is distributed to that community. So for 30 years, that infrastructure has been left to decay, old lead pipes. And it's going to cost a couple of billion dollars to overhaul that entire infrastructure and build a state of the art water filtration and distribution system. There are some people who don't think that Black folk are worthy of such investment, and they're doing everything in their power to prevent us from taking that step. But the point that I simply want to make, Sister Q, is that is why when we talk about the miracle of a cooperative economic model, what we are witnessing in Jackson and all across the United States and around the world is an economic model that is based on private control of the means of production, private ownership of the means of production, private control of the means of production. So you have this small minority, less than 1% of the population control the economics. And what we see then is this huge, for lack of a better word, sucking up of the wealth of people and funneling it into the hands of a tiny minority at the top. And they use that wealth to lavish luxury upon themselves. So they have these multi-million-dollar yachts and private jets and more land than you can shake a stick at, and multiple houses and the latest luxury automobiles and on and on and on. We know all of the material luxuries that the very rich afford themselves. Meanwhile, the masses of the people are at the brink of poverty and starvation. So we as a people have to recognize that private ownership of the means of production, private enterprise, the so-called free enterprise system, capitalism slash imperialism, all of that is the apparatus that the rich white male ruling class, that is the system that keeps them in power. And that is why they send our troops all over the universe. They maintain 800 military bases around the world is to guarantee that they keep control of the wealth of the world in the hands of that very small 1%. And that's what we're staring at. Now, the exciting thing, to get to the answer to your question on how all of this comes together for tonight's conversation, it's a miracle of cooperation that breaks that cycle. And here's the part that that just, if once we really grasp it, in other words, it's like we've been in prison and all of a sudden there's a power failure and all of the locked prison gates spring open. So here we have millions of us locked up in these fetid prisons and all of a sudden the prison doors spring open. Nothing to stop us from walking out and being free. But the vast majority of us are afraid to step out beyond the gate and enjoy freedom. And so the, what we have to realize is that we are at a moment where we can either exercise kujichagulia, that is self-determination. We can exercise our agency as this collective and very powerful people, we can make a decision that we're going to live a very different way. So the first aspect of this miracle of a cooperative business model or a cooperative economic model is to say that we can do this. It's one thing to be trapped on the plantation when you have no options. It's another thing to free ourselves from the plantation and refuse to go. It was, you know, Harriet Tubman said to have said, you know, she freed hundreds, but she could have freed thousands if they had only known that they were slaves. We are mentally enslaved to a system of gross inequality and injustice, and the ability to change that, to build an alternative model, is completely in our hands. The only reason we haven't done it is because we've been convinced that we can't do it.
Which is quite interesting, Auntie, because we do it for somebody else. We build, and it doesn't matter what area of activity you go into, there are some of us doing, building, planning, doing everything that makes this system run. It's just not running on our behalf. We're doing the work for somebody else. And in many instances, if we say to our counterparts who are doing this work, you know, come, let's do it for ourselves, they say, no, we can't do it for ourselves, even as they're doing it for someone else. So I agree quite what you say with the it's a mindset, and we think that we can't do it for ourselves.
Right, and to be honest, we didn't just wake up one day thinking this way. They've invested, you know, hundreds of years of conditioning and control and mind manipulation to bring us to this point of not being able to see the fact that you just made, that we're already doing this. We're just doing it for somebody else as opposed to doing it for ourselves. So this is our moment to take seriously the issue of self-determination, to define for ourselves the kind of world that we want to live in. Now, Mother Nature has stepped into the fray on our side to say, okay, I'm going to tear up the climate in such a way that all of these systems that you are just so wed to and think you can't live without, I'm just going to collapse the whole thing. And when you find yourself without water, you find yourself in sweltering heat because the temperature is 110 degrees and climbing. When you find yourself being flooded out of your home and this home that you've worshipped and been over backwards with all of a sudden has just been washed completely away, and you realize that this is the way it's going to be for the next 50 to 100 years unless you change your behavior. So now we are forced to ask some very hard questions and to take a very hard look at what exactly is the reality in front of us. If we don't get the climate issues under control in the next 5 to 10 years, is it really true that we're going to hit a tipping point beyond which we can't return? And the answer is yes. That's exactly what's about to happen. If we don't cut greenhouse gas emissions by 50% by 2030, whatever's going on right now is going to look like a picnic compared to what will come after that. And it's only going to get worse as we go forward. So the only reason that we can't make the dramatic kinds of change that we need is because the super rich, this is how they make their money, off of fossil fuel sales and production and control those resources. The country would have shifted to electric cars and solar housing decades ago if the super rich could have controlled that energy source the way they control oil. See, in order for us to use oil, we have to go to the gas pump and pump it out and pay Exxon and Mobil and Standard Oil and these other companies. We have to pay them. And so every time we pull up to the pump, we're making the rich even richer because that's the source of energy. And they realized, they said, now, if we start solar production and people can put these solar panels on the roof of their houses and they no longer need to come to Georgia Power or Alabama Power or Con Edison or whatever the energy provider is in the place where you live, that's a problem for them. And so they know that fossil fuel consumption is driving the planet to the brink of collapse, but that's how they make their money. They haven't organized the renewable energy sector well enough to keep control over the majority of the money. So that's why they keep creating distractions and obstacles and prolonging the amount of time that we find ourselves still consuming these fossil fuel products and hastening the demise of the human family on the planet. So we know that. Many of us are waking up to that truth. Now the question is, well, what do we do? And that's where cooperative business models come into play. Now, we in Us Lifting Us, we've already done the legal work. We've created Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC. The mother company, the mother cooperative, already exists. And so what we are inviting our community to do is to pool their money, to pool all of our money into this cooperative umbrella that is collectively owned by us. In other words, we're not asking people to put their money in an institution or a business model that is only controlled by 1% at the top. We're saying, no, this model is a horizontal structure. everybody that pools their money has a vote in the decision-making process that governs this mechanism. So this is truly democratic. And on an annual basis, we come together to discuss the conditions of the co-op, the conditions of the world, and make decisions about what is it that we need to do next. Well, you know, we've opened up, we're moving forward in our ability, our capacity to feed ourselves. We're now looking very seriously at how do we clothe ourselves. We're looking at the construction business, how do we build housing, and et cetera. Those that a self-determining people make. And we now have created the forum where we can have these conversations about how do we direct a $1 billion income flow to meet the needs, the material needs of our people. That's the first step in this cooperative business model. And since the umbrella is already created, that part of the work is done. Now it's just a matter of people stepping up to saying, yes, let me bring my resources, let me pool my dollars into this structure so that I can help us build the things that we need, because clearly the existing system is crumbling down all around us. So we don't have to.
Brother,
this is not something where, yes.
Oh, go ahead. Finish your thought. We have a someone with their hand raised. So you finish your thought, and then we can take the call.
What I like most, Sister Q, and we've said this in past programs, this is not something that we have to have someone else's permission to do. I can't state that forcefully enough. We don't have to take this to the Supreme Court. We don't have to take this to the state legislature. We don't have to take this to the governor or to the president or to the mayor and to get their stamp of approval. These mechanisms, this ability to open cooperative businesses that are collectively owned and controlled by our communities is something that only we can do. And we can do it all by ourselves. If people can hear that, that would be a tremendous first step. So let me pause there and take the question.
Okay. Just a minute. Caller with the last four digits, 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Hey, greetings, Sister Q, Brother Ankti. This is Brother Shabaka calling from the sunny state of Florida.
Brother Shabaka, rub it in, why don't you?
Yeah, how you doing? How both of you doing? How the family doing?
We're doing great.
Doing
good
well.
To hear you.
Oh, good, great. Look, I got a question. Couple of them, you know, and I'll we'll state it, and I appreciate you and Sister Q responding. Now, you know, I hear quite often, Brother Ankti, what you've heard about the ten year limitation that we have in terms of what will transpire and be irreversible. So I'm saying now that the wealthy people, you know, they have their scientists, you know, the millionaires, they have their scientists. Do you really think that they are uninterested in staying alive after 10 years? And the reason I raise that, because, you know, it was a lot of hype back there during the Y2K days, you know, when they said the computers was going to fall down and everything was going to be disrupted and stuff like that. And, you know, after 2000 got here, ain't nothing happened, you know. In fact, I was pushing that stuff. I was trying to sell my little booklet. Well, I was doing a hustle then. So I asked you, do you think that they are not aware or ignoring their scientists or whatever? And in 10 years, all right, suppose we go past the 10 years. What is it that you see that Ulu can do if, in fact, 10 years pass and there's still a dependency on fossil fuel. And I'll hold up and listen to your comment.
And that's a great question, Brother Shabaka. And thank you for raising it. And yes, you're right. I think many of us have memories of the Y2K scare. I think there's a difference between Y2K and where we are now with the pending collapse of the environment is that it's happening right now. I was listening to, I guess it was NPR, and they were talking about the drought that and the floods that are devastating Pakistan. 3 million people have been displaced because of the floods. I mean, a third of their population has been uprooted from their homes and turned into refugees. The numbers are staggering. Now, the super rich, they most certainly have plans for how they're going to weather whatever comes down the pipe. The question is just like in Jackson, Mississippi, you got 150,000 folk, 82% of them don't have clean drinking water. Now, do the rich in Jackson, Mississippi have drinking water? Absolutely. Are they taking baths? Absolutely. Are they able to cook with the tap water out of their sinks? Absolutely. But for the majority of those just working class families that are trapped in Jackson, no, they don't have clean water. So, but I think the more important part of your question, at least is, as I'm hearing it, Brother Shabaka, is what do we do after? You know, let's just say that we don't see the consequences that we might, but what we are going to see is major disruptions of what we had thought of as normal living. And in that climate, the best thing that we in Ulu are offering is to build the institution, the economic institutions that enable us rather than to be pulled and pushed to and fro by the conditions, whether it's weather or drought or flood or hurricane, rather than be tossed and, you know, driven by those phenomenon. We are able in that environment where things are uncertain and collapsing to build institutions and the infrastructure that we need. But most importantly, we're creating the people system, the people structure, so that we have a place where we can come together and communicate and then put into action the decisions that we're made. That's the piece that that's the first aspect of this miracle of the cooperative model. We, first of all, it gives us the opportunity to take a deep breath, step back and say, well, what is it that we really need to build? And then because of the fact that this is a horizontal, group-owned, family-centered business model that's driven by mutual self-respect, mutual love, a genuine concern for the planet and the Most High, now we are able to move beyond the limited vision of capitalism to an expanded global vision of how do people share the resources of the planet? How do we make the full use of the talent that is just lying dormant in each of us and bring those skills to the surface and put together communities that are healthy and whole and growing? That's in the midst of a crisis, because that's what's collapsing is the old way of doing business, the old models of interaction and relationships is being disrupted, and it's calling forth new leadership, it's calling forth new ideas. It's calling forth new ways of interacting with each other. It's a very exciting moment for us to look at and to live through. But we are guided by a value matrix of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba that tells us how we should think about the world, how we should think about one another, and what it is that we need to do together to be able to provide food, clothing, and shelter for each other. But I do think, given what we are looking at, that the climate crisis is going to continue to sharpen, and more of us are going to be impacted by that. And so we really do need to move very quickly towards renewable energy. But more than just thinking about renewable energy, we need to move towards a society that is driven by cooperation rather than a society that is driven by fear and competition and hatred of people that says that some groups say are not worthy to be included in, you know, in the places of refuge in times of crisis. I hope I'm speaking to what you were asking, Brother Shabaka.
Yeah, thank you very much, brother, for the reply.
Thank you for your question, Brother Shabaka.
Yeah, because Sister Q, when you boil it down, with everything that's going on, look at the very infantile conversations that's going on in our county and in our Board of Education. In other words, people are coming to the Board of Education meeting. We're not concerned about the fact that after 2 years of COVID, all of our children have fallen behind.
Mm-hmm.
We want to argue about what books should be in the library. We at the elementary school level, we want to argue about whether or not critical race theory is being taught. Those are questions and issues that aren't even relevant to what it is that the children need. And so that is part of the crisis of this collapsing system. People have been frightened and hyped up on the idea that they're going to lose something if you and I wind up with an extra cookie. You follow what I'm saying, Sister Q? And rather than have us make any progress, they will tear up the whole thing just to hold on to what they think is their source of power. And so we are in the midst of a very rapidly changing world that's calling for us to think very differently about how we go forward. And they're not even raising the right questions. Conversations aren't really focused on what it is that we need to be doing to prepare for these kinds of outcomes. And so there again is why ULU becomes important, because this allows our community to act independently of whatever foolishness these other groups want to put forward. In other words, we're not depending on them to take care of ourselves. So that's the first aspect in my thinking of the miracle of this economic business model. You want to comment, or you want to move on into the next step of this?
We can move forward. I have nothing really to add to what you were saying, except to say that I agree with you completely that the people who are generating the confusion and the fear are quite comfortable in their knowledge that 10 years from now, things will be as good as they want to make it, and probably will be better for them in 10
right.
years than it is right now. That's their plan. And I have nothing against them for their plan. My idea is that we need to make our own plan. We can't rely on somebody else. It's very childish of us to expect somebody outside of ourselves to look out for us. You know,
yeah.
that's just not the way of nature.
Thank you for putting it so clearly. Because unfortunately, I think many of us have allowed just that to happen, allowing other people who have no interest in our issues to guide the decision-making that is going to affect the quality of life for us and our children. That, like you say, nature don't work that way. So the second point about why this cooperative business model is so miraculous and so important, you know, we're moving from this idea that the first thing is it gives us the ability to be self-determined. We decide how we're going to organize our economics. The second thing is that it makes Black people the collective owners of the means of production. Now, I have to ask, how do you hear that when I say it makes Black people the owners, the collective owners of the means of production? The reason that is important, Amilcar Cabral said in an article called Weapon of Theory, that national liberation is only achieved when Black people have thrown off all foreign elements of control over their means of production. He went on to say that it is only when you control the means of production that you are able to write history of yourself. And that is so profound. We really have to grasp it. In other words, if this system turned around tomorrow and made every Black person on the planet a millionaire and guaranteed that all of us would never have to work again and could just enjoy this money, that would be the height of enslavement. Because at that point, we would stop asking the critical questions, is this right? Is this good? Is this righteous? Is this how the planet should be? How we should live on the planet? And at that point, whoever gives you the ability to do that clearly has the power to take it back if they decide to do that. I like what Baba Hekima says so often. He says, freedom is something that you take with your own hands or you don't have it at all.
For sure.
So he's pushing us to see that when I say this cooperative business model puts the means of production in our hands, what we're saying is that if you decide to become a member of Us Lifting Us tonight, you pay your $50 annual membership fee, and you take out a subscription to start payment on your purchase of a co-op unit, which is $1,000. And as we pool those $1,000 into a multi-billion dollar pot, and we start opening cooperative businesses, if the business is a solar electrification business, if it's a farm producing fresh produce, if it's a factory producing clothing for our children, no matter what the business is, every one of those is part of what we call the means of production. In other words, every community, every society has to feed, clothe, and shelter itself. And the tools that it uses to do that, that's land and technology and machinery and raw materials, all of that's means of production. And so ULU, as we make decisions about what businesses do we need to open, we take our money and we open those businesses. We purchase the electronics, the equipment, the utilities, whatever's necessary to produce whatever it is that we've decided we're going to make, whether it's a car or a bicycle or a motorcycle, a dress or whatever. Now we are collective owners of the means of production. No one can take that from us. In other words, we're not on Massa's plantation any longer. We are on our own land and doing the things necessary to provide for ourselves. We are, in a word, free. Mm-hmm. Nothing else that we're doing can give us that. If we remain inside of capitalism, we remain wage slaves. Or even though the salaries may be attractive, uh-huh. even though the salary may be six-figure or seven-figure, you still are working for somebody else. We're not building for ourselves. And we don't control the mechanism at the end of the day. And so sure. the second aspect of the this miraculous cooperative business model is that it gives us control and ownership of the means of production. Now, and I already said that, as Cabral pointed out, now we are at a place where we're going to begin to rewrite our own history. That is what a self-determining people do. We don't want to be a footnote in someone else's history. We want to write mm-hmm. our own story. As creative as we are, as powerful as we are, the kinds of genius that we reflect every time we step outside the door. Bernice Johnson Reagan say we'd be shining so bright you got to wear shades just to keep you know to watch me as I'm coming down the street.
Right.
That kind of beauty, that kind of power, that kind of grace is unleashed when we control our own economic destiny. Again, only the cooperative model enables us to do that. And at this point, I'm just hoping people are hearing enough of what we're saying so that even if you decide not to become a member of ULU, that's okay. You know, we would love for you to be here. But if you decide that you're going to get up with a group of people and open your own co-op, fantastic. All cooperative business models allow for the members of that co-op to become joint owners of the means of production. That's the point we're trying to make. We've got to get to a place where we collectively own the economy. It's a group-owned economy. It's a family-centered economy. It's not privately owned and run with a small handful of people making the decisions. This is a large-scale business enterprise where we come together periodically to discuss the issues confronting us and making decisions as to what we will do about it. There was an example in the Mondragon cooperative group. And for those of you who, if you have not heard Mondragon before, just Google Mondragon Cooperative Northern Spain. It's a multi-billion dollar cooperative run by the Basque group of people in northern Spain. And they operate hundreds of businesses. And several of those businesses, the market turned down. They were faced with having to close some of the businesses and lay off some of the workers. And they held a meeting and they said, none of the people who work in this factory will lose their job. We will find them employment at other factories, in other ways. We will retrain them. They will maintain their salaries throughout the downturn.
Right.
That's not the way capitalism works. If capitalism hits a downturn, they just going to give you a pink slip and tell you good luck. But because this was a cooperative business model that was meeting the needs of that community, they said, well, no, we're not going to lay anybody off. We'll find a way to keep everybody employed through this downturn. That's what I mean in terms of when we control the means of production, those are the kinds of decisions we have the opportunity and the ability to make. We're not – someone from the outside is not telling us what we're going to do with our labor power. And that's one of the beauties and the things that excites me about ULU. Now, ULU takes it a step further. Not only is this a group-owned business that puts us in control of the means of production, this is a family-centered, group-owned, African values-driven business model. Now, that's what puts Ulu in a category all by itself, that we mm-hmm. have intentionally, that every decision that we make in this business model will be driven by our understanding of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba. In other words, it's got to be truthful. It's got to be justice. It's got to be righteous. It's got to be based on the order of the universe. It's got to be harmonious. It's got to be balanced. And there's got to be reciprocity. That's mm-hmm. got to be the living, breathing core of how we conduct ourselves inside of this business model. There's got to be right. unity and self-determination and collective work and responsibility and cooperative economics and purpose and creativity and faith. All of these values have to be reflected in the decision-making that we do. Once you factor in that aspect, Ulu is the only organized economic enterprise that has taken cooperative economics to that level. And we attribute that to our understanding of what Mwalimu Julius Nyerere taught us when he gave us the definition of Ujamaa. He said, mm-hmm. we have chosen the word Ujamaa to describe the economy that we're building because at the root of Ujamaa is the understanding of familyhood. And so for him, he was organizing the people of Tanzania to practice their familyhood in such a way that it produced an economy. And so if people are able to hear what we're saying tonight, it's as we live out the values of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba, that guides us into how we do the work, the economic work of feeding, clothing, and sheltering ourselves. Right. What we do, we don't offer people a job per se. We create opportunities for sacred service. In other words, mm-hmm. you might be a gifted seamstress, Sister Q. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
Nobody can sew like you can sew. And it's in you to do that. You just need someone to put you in front of a sewing machine and give you the material and turn you loose.
Right. Okay.
And you're eager to do this because that's your gift. Well, you're mm-hmm. going to get compensated for that. So for you, that's sacred work. Mm-hmm. And for the people who receive the end product, they can wear it with pride because every fiber of that garment speaks to the energy that you put into making it. That's the right, kind of right. difference that this economic model affords us as we build it and grow it out. That too is part of the miracle of the Ulu Cooperative business model. And it really excites me. Somebody was saying, what was that term? Labor of love. It'll come to me. But the idea is that there was a time when, and again, going back to Mwalimu Julius Nyerere, he looked at how did African people, certainly in the area of Tanzania and East Africa more broadly, they were practicing a form of communalism. That's where he got the idea from how Tanzania would organize its economy after it got free from British control.
Mm-hmm.
So he was applying this ancient practice of African communalism and updating it to where it could function in the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, et cetera. And as we right. study what he was attempting to do in Tanzania, we say those same principles can work in 2022. That's why we mm-hmm. say Ulu is family-centered, group-owned, collective cooperative business. We want people to be very clear that what guides us in how we operate this business, we're not driven by a profit motive. We're driven by a love motive. We're driven mm-hmm. by concern for our sisters and brothers as members of this large family system And we recognize that all of us got to eat. All of us have to have some place to lay our head. All of us have to have clothes to wear. And we're not going to rest until we've taken care of every member of the family. That is success in the ULU model.
Right. You said in the village has failed if there's one person without a home or hungry. So that in the ULU model, we can't have that.
We won't have it. We won't have it.
For sure.
We won't have it.
Right.
Our
job is not complete until we've done that. Yes.
Right. Right. And any economy that would operate and create the kinds of inequality that we see in this country, that model is demonic. Let's just call it what it is. That's demonic. You got people making billions of dollars, and then you got millions of people don't have adequate food to eat or clean water to drink. That's demonic. And so
the
system that we're
building. I was saying you have four times as many vacant houses as you have homeless people.
Yes, yes. Criminal. You got people living under bridges when you've got vacant buildings that you refuse to let people occupy. Something is perverse about that. And so the last point, Sister Q, is simply that if we are serious about regaining sovereignty, then the cooperative business model is the model that allows us to do that. Because as it grows and employs us and generates wealth and allows us to produce wealth, because that's what work does. It allows you to produce wealth. Every time you turn out a product, you have produced wealth. Both the product is a symbol of that wealth, as well as the groups that produced it is a symbol of wealth. When we harness that wealth and use it to defend ourselves and to defend our borders and to protect our families and our children, and again, because we control the means of production, we now are practicing sovereignty in a very real way. We're no longer the toy things and the playthings of the rich people who currently control the global population. Let's be real. It's not just the United States. They control the global, and that's what's going on in Ukraine. That's the fight between Putin and his forces versus the EU and the United States. And the fight is about who's going to control the world. And so our position is we want to see Africans at a point where we control our own space. You know, it's tragic that there's a country, there's several countries in northeastern Africa that are dependent on the wheat and the products coming out of Ukraine, and they're on the brink of starvation. So we have to ask ourselves the question, how is it that we've allowed an entire country not to be able to feed itself? I mean, that would be the first order of business if we're really an independent, sovereign country. We got to be able to feed ourselves. Again, that's an economic question.
That reminds me of Dr. Vandana Shiva of India, you know, that for one time they were dependent on the British. And he said that what they did is they went back and found out what their traditional foodstuffs had been before the British came. And there were like 7,000, I think he said 7,000 plants and different things that they had been eating traditionally, and so they resurrected the use of those things. And so I'm saying the people in where is it? I don't remember the countries that you're talking about, or any country, anywhere. They have foodstuffs that are indigenous to their land. They just don't know what
mm-hmm.
they are because
mm-hmm.
they've gotten
mm-hmm.
used to importing, you know, food from Europe, from the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
from
mm-hmm.
all over the place. Where
right.
I'm sure if you were to ask some of the elders there, they could tell you what they used to eat when they were growing up.
That's right.
And it's all it's growing all around, you know, free.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for the people to be starving. It's just a matter
right.
of memory.
I like that. Good point. The matter of memory.
Yes.
Remembering and
yes.
recapturing and rebuilding. Thank you,
for
Sister
sure.
Q.
Yes. So, Brother Anki, we want to... Are you finished with what you wanted to say?
I'm not finished, but we're out of time.
Well, no, we got another hour. But anyway, thank you, Brother Anki, for reminding us of what it is that we need to do. And it is a miracle. You know, they say a miracle is only a miracle because we don't understand the process. So
right.
you break the miracle down for us, and we see that it ain't that deep. It's just now we just need to put our shoulders to the wheel and get the work done.
Yeah.
And we want
yeah,
to thank
that?
You for reminding us of that.
Thank
and
you,
we
Sister
want
Q.
to thank everyone. Thank you, and we want to thank everyone that joined us for this evening's program. Join us again next Thursday evening, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace.